Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Carla Gambescia, and she's got two websites, Postcards from the Boot and La Dolce Vita University, and she's also authored a couple of books and out there gives lectures. So welcome, Carla. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Bob. Glad to be here. I'm here recording live from the Academia Bridge. I wish, right? Yeah.
Oh, I know. I know. I wish I was doing these things from Italy. Right. It would be so much more fun. But these turn out to be a lot of fun anyway. So certainly want to talk to you about the two websites because they're great websites. But before we do that, where are your family from?
Well, so this is interesting. I grew up in South Philly. I grew up in a super Italian neighborhood with parents who were very, very proud of their Italian heritage. But I think a lot of people of, you know, our age, our generation, have a real sense of, you know, what regions they were from, and they knew. And this was something that I didn't know. Yet, as a child, from my earliest memories, I knew I was Italian and that that made me special and that was incredible. And my father would tell me that I had descended from the Romans and the Medici. Now, you're like 6 or 7 years old and, you know, you don't really know what to make of that, but I knew that that was good and important, and it sort of set a high bar for me. So I grew up in South Philly, knowing I was Italian, that it was good, and that somehow there was something great in my heritage. But only in later life did I really discover, because my parents were, you know, we're going to speak English, you know, we had our meals that were uniquely ours, but it was really about being American. And only in later life did I learn that on my mother's side, they came very early. They came in the late 1870s, and they came from the province of or the region of Basilicata, a town called Acciatura, which is way up in the mountains. And I've visited there a number of times. I've actually ridden my bicycle there. And I really don't know how, like, they got to the boat, because it is very remote. That area is also known as the Piccolo Dolomiti. And there was an influx of Italians at this time from the south. And it was, there was a big earthquake in the 1880s. And there was no rebuilding there. Now, you had unification, all the promise of that, but it wasn't good. And they came, and they first went to Argentina, and then they didn't like that. And then they came to New York, but they loved Philadelphia. They thought there were more trees, and so they settled there. So that side is from Basilicata, the town of Acciatura. And there's a town, a street in town. It's like, you know, Via Di Biase. And that's one of our family names. And my father's family is from Abruzzo, in and around Chieti. And my father's mother is from Campobasso in Molese. So, but I've, you know, again, found these things out later, say, in my 30s, and not really from my parents. So it's interesting. And I really connect to my Southern Italian roots, and I'm very interested in culture, and that animates me, sharing Italian culture with others. But personally, when I travel to Italy, you know, I love the cities, I love the museums. But when I go south, and the more south I get, the happier I am. I mean, I just, there's something about it that just feels so, I don't know, home. It's amazing. So I just really personally favor the south. I love Puglia. I love Campania. I love Sicily. I love to be in the south. So, Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people say that too. But, you know, I'm from the South, so. But I think it's a homier feeling in the South, I think, than in the North.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember my first trip to Italy. It was with my parents, and I was 8 years old. And as soon as we got to Naples, and people were like, "This was like 1963 or 60, I don't. It was, you know, it's like Naples. You know, it's like, oh my God, you're going to Naples. I mean, you know, you're crazy." And my parents were like so happy there and just like so relaxed in the Bay of Naples and everything about it. It was soothing. It was just, I don't know, it had a serenity to it. And I just remember, you know, and again, you're little, you know, whatever, you have these certain impressions. And, you know, I liked what I liked as a child. I mean, I liked Venice because it was magic. And I still have this beautiful piece of, you know, we went to see a glassmaker and they made me a, you know, a horse. You know, so I still have my horse. It broke great. Once, but I repaired it. So I have a horse from 1963.
That's cool. That's so cool. Yeah. You know, we had gone 25 years ago and I didn't know that. I didn't know what I know now. But, you know, we just went and like you said, we were in Naples. My father's family's from Naples. So, you know, you walk around, and I say this to everybody, you walk around in a hometown that you know you came from, and you're walking the streets that your grandparents walked or your great-grandparents walked. It's almost a spiritual feeling, you know?
It definitely is, and I mean, I feel that way in Acciatorta. They have this amazing festival in May. It's called the Maggio, which is they have this kind of it's pagan-y thing, you know, where they have the wedding of the trees and it's a male tree and a female tree and they, whatever. But it's just amazing, you know, to know that, you know, your family, I mean, it is amazing and it's spiritual. I would agree with that. It definitely has an incredible feeling, but honestly, you know, I arrive and on a plane, wherever I land, as soon as I get off, I'm happier, you know, I'm just like, oh, I'm here. I'm like so happy that I'm here. And I just, everything, all the tension, it just drains out. And I'm suddenly in this beautiful place of joy and beauty. And I mean, so much of what I've done, and this is something that for me, the rediscovery, you know, I had these seeds planted when I was young and I went about my life and I did things that, you know, I just did things that were not centered around Italy or Italian culture. I was a marketing consultant. I traveled a lot in the Far East. I did a lot of things, very far flung, very mind expanding, very interesting work. And it was, I don't know, it was like maybe 1995, 1996. I took a bike trip in Sicily. And again, people were like not really going to Sicily in like the mid 90s. And something happened when I was there. And it was, I kind of consider it my personal renaissance where it was really life changing. I came back and, you know, I mentioned I was a consultant and I specialized in food marketing, food beverages, food service. And I came back and I'm like, I am going to open a restaurant that is going to be a concept. I'm going to duplicate it. I'm going to have gelato and coffee and a mozzarella bar. I had these ideas. And I'm going to celebrate culture. I want people to come in and have the food be this portal to culture. I would tell stories and use food to tell stories. And so sure enough, so I had this vision and I was going to open a restaurant. And it took me 20 years to do it. And I did. And so, but that particular trip, this trip to Sicily, where, you know, the services weren't good, the bike trip was disorganized, it didn't matter one bit because the people were, they embraced us and the tour people were, they were so gracious and trying so hard. And it was just a feeling. And it was just magical, transformative. And it did change my life. I mean, I opened a restaurant. And it was better than what I had in my head. And, you know, people have memories. It's interesting. You know, I do this blog, Postcards from the Boot, where I do interesting, like sort of photo tours. It's like a little mini vacation once a month. And someone wrote to me, she said, "Oh, I hope you're going to open another restaurant." And I'm thinking, never, never, never. But
so much,
you know,
work, right?
I'm she's saying she missed it so much, blah, blah, blah. You know, all these happy memories. And to know that, you know, I end up creating something that was a part of other people's lives. I mean, it changed me, but it was part of other people's lives. But, you know, I did programs. I had Italian classes for children and, you know, they learned food words. It was really nice, you know, but it is hard work. And I realized that I could do more, reach more through my writing and my blogging and my lectures, you know, than I ever could, you know, in a restaurant that seated 50, you know. So there's just so much that you can do in terms of outreach with something like that. But, you know.
Yeah, no, and I understand. And, you know, when I started doing my stuff, I was doing the blog and writing and everything. And that was fun. It was great. But it was only one way. And that's why, right. That's why I'm doing the interviews now, because, you know, everybody's story is similar, but yet so different. The family history, you know, the stories about how they discovered their family, the little skeletons in the closet and stuff. And
it's just, oh, yes.
It's so cool to hear these things, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And everything I've done, really, I've dedicated to my parents, because, you know, they, even though we had this kind of on the outside, we're American, all of this, the how we were proud and the pride in being Italian that was instilled by my parents. Now, my father, and they were different and they gave me different things. So my father, was a physician. He died when I was 11, but his influence on me was incredibly powerful. And he was a great storyteller. And he, you know, he would tell me, you know, on Sunday we would have Italian lessons. So we'd do words and we'd talk. And then we inevitably would move to, like, I wanted him to tell me a story. And he would tell me stories like of Vivaldi, you know, the Preterosa, the Red Priest, who taught the orphan girls to sing and play the violin, you know. And then when we go to Venice to see his church, just incredible. Or Dante and Beatrice, and, you know, this love story, and he sees her, she's 9 years old, you know, and I'm like 7, and I'm like, cool. You know, so all of these things, and they became real to me. And it would be like, tell me the Dante story again, or tell me about Galileo and the ball and Pisa and all of those things. And so they became familiar to me in the way that's like a Hansel and Gretel kind of thing. And I loved the stories. And I had this, you know, and then in my restaurant, I named my pizzas, all of my pizzas, after great Italian, and they took on characteristics of the people. So, for example, the Vivaldi was roasted red and yellow peppers, you know, in honor of his, you know, flaming red hair, you know. But I wrote little things in the menu to give people this information, so it wasn't just an inside joke for me, mm-hmm. you know. And I had these little, they were little cards, and people collected them. They were fun facts, and it was brought to you by La Dolce Vita University. And so that's how the name of the book that I wrote, came about, La Dolce Vita University, which was, you know, these little fun facts and vocabulary cards that people collected that were like on the table, you know, or whatever. But, and then, you know, and then the book came out of the came out of the restaurant. And then my photography, I would have these slideshows of my photos in, you know, a flat screen on the bar. We had different things, but there was always a flat screen that had photographs of places, and people would like to watch that. And so, yeah.
That's so cool. You know, you mentioned the stories and everything like that. And I think that's one of the saddest things, you know, we're losing that now with the youth. Our youth isn't connected like we're connected.
No. And actually, I mean, it's so interesting because I have my background, I went to business school. I was a marketing person. And so everyone has all of the organizations, all of them, you know, have this issue with, you know, declining membership. How do we engage youth? And then basically we have all these people who are like, I call them fractionals. You know, they have maybe one grandparent, and people are, you know, you don't have the close family bonds. People move. All of these things. And one of the things that I really want to do, and this is sort of post-pandemic. I mean, during the pandemic, I really hunkered down. I wrote more. I was lecturing constantly. But now what I really want to do is go back into the world of business and to create and engage people in things that are for profit, because actually, like charitable things, it's hard to keep people's energy. Like when it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's like you get people given the opportunity to make money, they'll be excited. But things that actually promote an amazing image, exciting image of Italy and you know, young people. So, for example, like one thing I really want to do is to create. And this is part of, it's what I was trying to do with really my restaurant, but it was like a restaurant, and it's hard when you're doing food service, full menu, it's harder. But if you're doing gelato and coffee and small plates, you can do more interesting things, but to create a space that makes a statement about Italy today, oggi, Italy, Italia oggi, bar oggi, where people, young people can come in and say, wow, this is so cool. I think I'm a quarter Italian, you know, my inner Italian. It's like, get people to really embrace their roots. I mean, it's a country people love. They want to visit it. It's like most popular country always to visit, but to really get people to engage with their roots and to embrace that, you know, fractional part of themselves, you know, because I think that, you know, there's been various research studies, and I'd like to do a more thorough investigation of this. But, like, you know, people don't want to be French. I mean, you know, they don't want to be French. Italian, it's...
Everybody wants to be Italian.
Everyone wants to be Italian, right? Exactly. I mean, you know, you talk about, I would say this to people in my restaurant. I would say, you have an inner Italian. And no one said, what do you mean by that? They said, of course I do, you know, and they understand that that's like their best, most expressive, fun, engaging, you know, like, yeah, happy self. That's what, you know, and so there's something really powerful there. And I really think that our community would do itself a great service to, you know, young people are not going to join the organizations. You know, you can try, but I think that, you know, that's a uphill battle. I think we have to engage young people in different terms and think about things, you know, in different ways. I mean, I would love also, I met an amazing person, a theater director down in Agrigento, who really loved my book. And, you know, I've been kicking around with him. Like, could this be, you know, a Broadway musical, you know, where, you know, it's think of Book of Mormon or Cats or whatever, where instead of Bada Ba Bing and the mafia, you have Italy and all of the cultural contributions, but done in, with fun. I mean, everything I write about is meant to be, I say, edutaining, where it's uplifting. You learn something, you maybe laugh. I just want to make it fun and exciting. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, and so many of Italians have, you know, taken roles that have promoted, you know, these less than positive images of, you know, these, and that have become stereotypes and it's negative. I mean, we're fully integrated nationality, and yet, you know, these images persist, and, you know, and it's almost like young people think, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's true. And, you know, there's a couple of us been talking about it. We have to do what the Jewish people have done for the last 20 years. And that's to send our youth. Birthright.
Yes.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. And I didn't realize how big it really was until Frank and I were talking about it. But one day I just happened in passing to mention it to my neighbor across the street who's Jewish. And he said, oh, both my kids have gone.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
They all go. And, well, yeah. Of course, they're well-funded, and they know how to organize. I mean, you know, this is the herding of cats, but with the Italian community. But one thing, I mean, it's very interesting. The National Italian American Foundation has a program called Voyage of Discovery, and it was endowed by a former ambassador, but they're sending about 200 kids a year. And, you know, it would be great if they could send 2,000. I mean, maybe yeah. It's not a birthright thing, because actually I think it's nice if you feel that you earn it, and that there's something, you know, you have to actually write something in order to qualify, or, you know, it's almost like it's something that I think should be a goal for young people, as opposed to you just get to go. But, I mean, and this is another thing. I mean, there's a mindset within the Italian American community about, there are little scholarships, okay? So these scholarships, you know, there's a lot of ways that kids can fund their education. And the scholarship, that whole pattern of, you know, monetary support, and what it did, you know, back in 1930 or 1940 or 1950, it's completely different than the environment today. And that money could be better spent sending kids on this voyage of discovery. And this, you know, again, it's how do you get these organizations to work together? It's not just, well, this organization's program, but to have it be something where people work together to send, you know, people from their area on this, you know, voyage of discovery.
Thing. Yeah. And I'm working with somebody, you know, the person who did our tour, we're doing a couple of things, but we, you know, I said to her, we need to get the Italian government involved in some way,
yes.
shape, or form, because Italy is going to benefit from it. Not just our kids, but, you know, Birthright Israel, they've contributed over $2 billion to the Israeli economy. By
right.
having Birthright Israel. So it's a win-win, if
well,
you know what I mean.
It is. And, you know, and then there's all this, like, oh, you know, this, like, whining, like, no one is studying Italian. But you know what? If you had something like this, there are all these other, like, things that cascade down, that you will have repercussions, really positive, that you don't quite understand, but would be really good, because you know, it's like if you have this thing where you will go to Italy for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in the summer, kids will want to learn the language. And I mean, it's, and especially now, like I don't know, I can't speak to this. I don't have children, about what's being taught in school or, but I can remember like just the whole learning about ancient Rome, all of these things. And,
that's all gone. You know, It's all gone.
So, and they're not, and the thing is that they're not really going to engage in that way necessarily in a more academic way, but there's a spirit in Italy that it's just, they want to be stylish. They want to eat the food. They want to be there. They want to gesture, you know, all of these things that can, you know, be those seeds because, you know, and again, I feel so fortunate. I mean, my parents planted these seeds for me and I went about things, but I came back and I came back to them later, but the seeds were there. And I mean, my mother, I mean, she just loved art and she would like to look at art books and I would sit with her when I was little. I learned yeah. which artist was which, you know, yeah. And so I learned those things.
So I want to talk to you about the websites because I think they're two great websites. So postcards from the boot. Now I know how you have a lot of your stuff out there, but people could also contribute their stories, right?
Yes. And I wish people would, I mean, cause I've had inquiries. I don't charge anyone anything. I'm happy to do that. And I have certain colleagues, who have over time, you know, done multiple posts for me. And I mean, what I'm really looking for are great pictures. And like, for example, this month I talked about the chocolate cities. I mean, people, you know, from a culinary point of view, people are like, oh, pasta, or if you think about sweets, you think cannoli or tiramisu, whatever. But I mean, few people know that Italy was the capital of the chocolate producing capital of the world after the discovery of cacao in the New World and the Spanish brought it back. It got, you know, all of this production. It came into Italy through the port of Genoa and then was produced in Torino. And so there's, you know, gianduja, chocolate hazelnuts, and, you know, people know about Perugina and all of that, but that came much later. And then in Sicily, they were also the Spanish, the tradition more of how the Aztecs worked with chocolate, which was the chocolate and then the sugar suspended in the chocolate, which you have Modica chocolates, very grainy. It's really interesting, but you know, but that's that topic this past month, which was talking about the three cities and their relationship to chocolate, was a little bit more content oriented. But my goal, for the most part, is to engage people with great images that give them the sense of a mini vacation once a month, that it's something that they look forward to. And I mean, I don't have a huge list of people, but I have a 40% open rate, and I mean, it hovers like 35, 42. That's a big open rate.
That's a big number. And, yeah.
I think it's cause like, I don't send emails every other day. Right. And there it's fun stuff to look at. And, you know, people, you can also see they go back, they repeat. And so I feel like I'm engaging people with really interesting visual content. And it is doing what my aspiration is, that it gives them a little, you know, a chance to be emotionally transported, to just travel in their imagination.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly going to put some of my stuff out there. So
I'm going to put some of my stuff out there from our trip.
So.
Okay, that's great. And then, you know, and then the other website, La Dolce Vita University, really began as my book's website, because that's the name of the book. And I've now evolved. I mean, I have the book. It's in its second edition. The second edition added, I don't know, maybe 150 pages of new content. So it's a pretty big book right now. It's nearly 500 pages. Sometimes I think, oh, I can have a volume one, volume two, because I keep writing. And the book itself is kind of like a fun encyclopedia. And it's La Dolce Vita University, an unconventional guide to Italian culture from A to Z. And the A to Z is really a reference to, it's organized by letters of the alphabet. So like A is for Arlecchino, A is for Amarone, A is for Amaretto. And it just, it kind of breaks things into little parts. I say they're tesserae in this like very grand mosaic that is Italy and Italian culture. And so that's the book. But, you know, more and more I have found through speaking engagements that, you know, I do lectures on a particular topic. I also do these trivia challenges, which are Q&As that are fun around a theme like Venice or antiquity or food. You know, I do a trivia, Italian cultural trivia for foodies. Always people love that. So I do these programs. And so La Dolce Vita University is now, you know, it's much bigger than the book, but it's kind of this platform, edutainment platform of fun learning and just ways to engage people about Italian culture without being overly academic, you know, just to engage them in a more playful way. So you learn something and that's cool and you're happy. Yeah. And yeah, it wasn't hard. You know, it's like, oh, that essay was so hard to read, you know? Right.
I certainly want to get that out to people. One of the, you know, when I was going through it and I saw one of the headlines, The Leading Ladies of the Renaissance. So I'll tell you why that struck me, because you mentioned her in the paragraph. One of my, two of my great-great-grandparents, going way, way back, are Isabella d'Este and Francesco Gonzaga.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, she's so fabulous.
I refer to her as the Jackie Kennedy of the Renaissance.
That's the Jackie O of the Renaissance. Well, yeah. But she was an amazing. Okay, so she was like a fashion icon. I mean, people copied her clothing. And, I mean, she was painted by, you know, Titian, Rubens. I mean, she desperately wanted Leonardo to paint her, but he did a sketch of her. But she was incredible, but she was a great politician. And
that's right.
You know, she was, first of all, she was the eldest of the d'Este's children. And they really believed in educating daughters in the same way as their sons. And she and her sister Beatrice married the Duke of Milan. But anyway, they received an amazing education. And, you know, she did so much when she married Federico. You know, she did so many things to upgrade the culture of Mantua. It was incredible. But he was a condottieri. But she was much more like, she had her political acumen was much better. He was, you know, captured. She negotiated with the King Charles of France for his release. She also managed to get Mantua promoted to a duchy, which was like a really big deal back in the day. I mean, that would be like having statehood granted. So it was really big. But, you know, she's amazing, you know, and, you know, she had a great education. She came for money, all of those things that you would expect, but she really did it right. And, you know, she's amazing. I can't believe you're related to her.
I never knew who she was before I started doing the research. My grandmother in the picture up there behind me, She's from two noble families, Caracciolo and Piermalo. And through the Caracciolo line, I descend from Isabella d'Este.
Oh, my God.
Countless other people. Pope Paul III is another grandfather.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
That's somebody asked me the other day. I thought popes couldn't have children. I said, well, back then.
Wow. That's incredible. Was he in the Counter-Reformation? He was important.
He was.
Didn't Bernini sculpt him?
I don't know. He was Pope, I guess. It was Pope for 15 years from, I don't know, 1524 or 5, some 1520s and 30s.
There's an amazing painting of him in Capo di Monte in Naples, painted by Titian.
I've seen it. I know that one.
He was very important in the Council of Trent. I mean,
yes.
he's really politically incredibly important because, I mean, the church's brand was really tarnished. You know, after kind of the Medici, like there was a lot of spending, the Borgia, all that, a lot of spending. But he kind of straightened up things and got like the house in order and he was really important. Wow. Wow. Yeah. I'm like very impressed that I know you. Wow.
The interesting thing about him was, he was Alexander IV's girlfriend's brother.
Yes. Right.
That's how he became a cardinal at the age of 18.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I know. I love all this kind of the Peyton Place of like, you know, these the soap opera of all of it. It's just so
and you know, he made his he had sons and grandsons and all of that. But right. Yeah, I come through that line and I didn't know until we got to Naples, and we didn't get there, but there's one of the, I guess it must be the Capo di Monte. They have all the Farnese portraits.
The Farnese, right. And then they have the Farnese bull.
Yeah.
Right. Which is incredible. The museums, I mean, I love the archaeological museum has the bull, and then the Capo di Monte has the paintings. I was there the summer before. In the Duomo
there's St. Francis Caracciolo.
Oh,
and he's not in my direct line, but he's a distant whatever he is.
Right.
But we got a tour of the Duomo from one of the Caracciolo di Torchiolo, my grandmother's family. He was nice enough to come and talk to us about the statue and all of that. And then in another part, my grandmother's father was from the Dukes of Capocotta, Piermalo. Actually, they were the Counts of Montebello in Calabria.
Wow.
My third great grandfather was the Count of Montebello. He married Duchess Beatrice Capici Picicelli. And in the Duomo, there's a little side chapel with the Capici in the floor, that crest. And then on the wall, there's another thing that she put in there that mentions both families.
Wow, that's fantastic. Wow. I'm so impressed.
Don't be impressed with me. I didn't do anything, but
no, I mean, I can't go much further back. I mean, Tommy, DiMagella.
DiMagella.
Right?
Yes.
Right. No, well, no. I mean, he's royal too.
Yes, he is too.
You know, he's really, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, he told me his story. I was like, wow.
I'm a little more noble than he is, but
yeah, they really, there you go. So.
Well, what happened was, the way I found it is my grandmother brought her father's, I say, calling card, about the size of an index card. And it says on there, has his name and the crest. And it says from the Dukes of Capocotta. And as a little boy, I was always in the photo book, and I always asked my mother about it, and she would say, and that was my father's family, and blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of where I started with my father's family. I had no idea what I was actually going to find. Wow. And when I put him in, I typed him into, you know, Google, and I figured, well, I'll find a little thing here or there. And he popped up of the page from the Libro de Oro showed up with him marrying Amelia Caracciolo. And I had never heard that name. And I called my cousin Louise, who lived with my grandparents. I said, do you know who this is? It looks like it's the family, but do you know? And she says, oh, of course, you know, that's known as mother. And the names all fit because my father was Nicola, named after his grandfather. My oldest aunt was Amelia, named after Amelia Caracciolo, who married Nicola Piramalo. So all of that fit, the dates fit, right. Everything fit.
Great, right. Wow.
But I had no idea. So once I found that, I traced them back through the Libro de Oro back to 950 in Naples, the earliest Caracciolo, first Caracciolo.
Wow.
And so again, when we were we went to the state archives, and for people who go to Naples, the state archives is really a cool place. So when we went there, they had us go in and they showed us one of the oldest records that they have in there is a Caracciolo record from 1100. And you know, the Italians, nothing's done under glass. No gloves.
Right.
Just go through everything.
So I had these problems in Acciatura where their records, they went back like 100 years, that was it. And then I've sort of figured out that I have to go to Portenza or something because they have nothing further for me. So I kind of came to a dead end, but I haven't given up. I mean, I have a lot kind of going on right now, but I feel like my Danubili line, it would be easier for me to follow than my father's side for a variety of reasons. But yeah.
Well, you know, my mother's side. Now, my mother's, that's why the book is Farmers and Nobles. My mother was from a farming family in Torito, right?
Right.
In America, that didn't matter. Over there, nothing would have ever happened, right?
Right.
But now, her family, I was so amazed because Torito and Acquaviva della Fonte, where they're from, there's hundreds of records. All of that stuff has been filmed. And I found 120, 130 records just like that right off the bat. It's all on the Antonati. I found my grandparents, both their birth records. I found their marriage record. I found aunts and uncles' birth records. I mean, I found a ton of stuff. But, you know, it all depends on who, because each region is different. It depends on who they want to, you know, how much they want to let FamilySearch.org go in there and film them and index them. My guess is they filmed a lot of these records, but they're not indexed. And that's why, and there's so many, that's why places like the big cities like Naples and some of the larger cities in Calabria and Sicily, you can't find them. They're there, but you can't find them because they haven't been indexed yet.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. That's interesting.
Because, you know, I've talked to the people at Family Search. I've interviewed them. And, you know, that's what they said. They said, we do the filming, but we rely on volunteers to go out there and index records.
Right.
So that's why sometimes they may be there. You just can't find them because they haven't been indexed yet.
Right. That's interesting. Good to know.
But, you know, I'm a crazy nut job with all of this stuff. So.
Right.
the back of the book, the back cover from the book is my grandmother. And I just got this maybe 6 months ago. My cousin that I had never known up until 8 months ago found this among his mother's things. And it's the postcard that my grandmother sent to her father in Italy around 1919.
Wow.
And his mom, his mom is my grandmother's half sister, and they were my great grandfather married somebody 30 years younger than him after my great grandmother died.
Right,
and she saved this. So I was just blown away when he sent me this picture and said,
right,
my mother had this postcard. So this is a postcard to Italy as opposed to a postcard from Italy.
From Italy. I know. It's incredible.
And her incredible. Handwriting on the back, you know, her handwriting on the back. So,
right.
And it's, you know, it was happy, but it was also sad because she knew when she wrote this postcard, she was never going to see her father again.
Father again. Right. Yeah. You know?
So, right. But I tell people all the time, I said, you never know what you're going to find. You have to keep digging. Sometimes you have to walk away for a while.
Right.
You know, to clear your head. But it's out there. You just have to be patient and then something will pop up.
Right. Right.
I'm certainly going to get those websites out there and we'll encourage people to send their, you know, their trips and put them on postcards.
Pictures, I would really love that. And it's nice. People write to me. I mean, I have gotten a lot of new friends just through, people. And I don't know, people kind of discover it either organically or someone shares it with them or whatever. So, yeah, but it's, but I really feel, that I'm a little bit on a mission to share and engage, yeah. You know, and that I'm doing something, it's small, but it feels important. And, you know, since the days of the restaurant, I mean, I've just met so many interesting people and my life's just taken a different direction. And it just gives me joy. Some people have the right temperament for a restaurant. And I did for a little while, you know, but it's a lot of repetitive things. You have to do things the same way, you know, people expect consistency. And I just really want to share with others the things that give me pleasure, which have everything to do with Italy. And I don't know, it just makes me want to get up in the morning and, you know, do my stuff. Because, you know, and especially when you get feedback and you know, okay, it's small, but it means something to somebody. It really matters.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. I retired from banking, I guess it's 6 or 7 years ago. And this has pretty much been my life. You know, my wife says to me, you're looking for dead people again? I said, yes, I'm afraid I am.
Yeah, yeah. Well, keep it up.
But that's my goal. My goal is my goal now, I feel, is to, you know, kind of want to educate people, like you said, about the good things about Italy, not all this, you know, crappy stuff we see in the movies. And then also, we got to get our youth connected back there. That's
right.
Very, very important to
me. And, you know, it's interesting because I have a very dear friend that I've met through my lecturing. And she's the head of Italian studies at Kent State. And she also runs their overseas program. And what she says is, just give me a kid for 2 weeks and I will change their life. And she's one of the most amazing, charismatic people. You should speak to her. I'll send you her name. She's amazing. And she is like this Pied Piper. She's amazing. And and then you have someone like that who can facilitate this for young people. And what's sad is, for example, in certain universities, Italian studies programs are being, you know, dismantled. I mean, and it's crazy because it's like, oh, well, we have to make it easier for people to graduate so we won't have a language requirement or whatever. And it's tragic.
Yeah.
But she's, this is one of the most charismatic educators and She's an amazing person. You must connect with her.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to her. I'd love to get her on an interview for sure. No question about it. No
Absolutely.
Question. Well, thanks, Carla. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking the time all the way from Venice, and we'll have to talk again.
Yes, it's very La Serenissima today, very serene. So it was wonderful. I'm so glad you had me, and I had a lot of fun.
Great.
You and get to know you.